The Business Buzz Podcast. The Business Buzz with Mudiwa Mock Justice Gabaza.
For the first time in 2021, we welcome you to the Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance, and economics news right here on Voice of Wits. That's VAU FM 88.1, broadcasting live from our studios in Braamfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Leo Mob Justice Gabaza, and I'll be your host for today. Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to keep you entertained, educated, and intrigued about the world of business. Now, this is our first show for the year, and there's been a lot to happen over the last couple of months. Our last show was about the first week of December, and since then we went into the festive season, and with it we really saw the full impact of the second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. And for many of us, statistics suddenly started becoming names. Not to say that the pandemic hadn't been real, but the second wave really did, take its toll on many different countries. We saw, at some point, getting over 4,000 cases a day was a big issue. But during the festive season into January, we started seeing numbers ticking, as high as 13,000 new cases being recorded every day. And this is just hope and appeal that everyone is keeping safe and doing everything in their power to make sure that they limit the spread and contact of this disease. Happy to say that this week we did see the arrival of the first batch of doses coming into South Africa of the vaccine. And it's really great news that we have reached that stage where we are talking about vaccination, because when we were first went into lockdown, there wasn't even anything like that. It was all uncertain. We didn't know how long the lockdown would last for, and for many businesses out there, January, people thought that people would be back in the office and life would return to normal, but that has certainly not been the case. Earlier this week, we did have another batch of good news. In addition to the entry of the vaccine into South Africa, we also had what has become known as a family meeting, where the president came on and gave us, the state of affairs of the country in terms of the COVID-19, but also took time to lift some of the restrictions, moving the curfew and also lifting the ban on alcohol, which is going to help a lot of industries, particularly the restaurant industries, liquor stores, and any other businesses that trade in liquor to actually, get back to business. All of those supply chains, people, etc. Certainly good news for many people in and around the country. But one industry that's really taken a toll, we often hear about what's going on with the airlines. We hear about, planes being grounded, etc. But bus companies, because of interprovincial travel and also cross-border travel being restricted over the last year, have really, really taken a knock. And this week we had the sad news that Greyhound and Cityliner would be shutting down after 37 years in business. I remember growing up, Greyhound was just always one of those companies. If you get into a Greyhound coach, it was a symbol of traveling in style. And the other company to also signal that things are not well at the moment is Putco, that has also announced that it is retrenching over 200 employees. Now, with all of that, economies are down at the moment, but one of the things that's been interesting about this period is that stock markets in many parts of the world are on the rise, and that's what we're going to be talking about on today's Business Buzz. How can you get in on the action, and should you be getting in on the action? And to help us to unpack these issues, we're going to be talking to some experts. Will be hearing from Warren Ingram, who is the co-founder of Galileo Capital, about the importance of investing and how to get started. And then after that, we'll talk to Simon Brown, who is the founder of Just One Lab, about how to pick companies and which stocks to invest in, and the processes that can actually help you to make some of those decisions. Also coming up, we're going to be getting into the business wrap. That's where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending morning business and economics news, and also getting into the Buffalo Index, where we tell you the state of your 100 Rand. Remember that you can join into the discussion, talk to us, let us know what you're thinking, feeling about everything that we're discussing. On Facebook, we have our FM, that's Voice of Wits, and then you can find our other Facebook page, that is the Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VowFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also stream the station live on vowfm.co.za, and remember that podcasts of the Business Buzz show are available on vits.journalism.co.za, in addition to iono.fm, Apple Podcasts, together with Google Podcasts. So that's how the show is looking like. Make sure you don't turn that down. On the other side of this, we get into the Business Wrap.
Business Wrap with Ken Sweatman.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz, and for today, we are looking at what's going on in the world of investing. But before we do that, we actually want to get a handle of what's going on in the economy and the markets. These are things that feed into investment decisions, you know, for many out there. And for today's Business Wrap, we are joined for the first time in 2021 by our financial expert, Ken Swettenham, on the line. Ken, greetings to you for the first time in 2021.
Thank you very much, and the same to you as well, and your listeners, of course.
Now, thank you so much, as always, you know, for joining us. I think for this week, you know, the petrol price, it was a relatively quiet week, but the biggest news of the week was, you know, some news around the petrol price. Can you tell us what's going on that front?
Yes, of course. Unfortunately, it's never good news when the fuel goes up so sharply, over 80 cents a litre for petrol, and I think it was around 58 cents a litre for diesel. And this just reflects through all aspects of the economy. It affects each and every one of us. If you have your own motor vehicle, it's going to cost you probably around 50 rand more to fill your tank of fuel. If you use public transport, it's always an excuse for the taxis, the buses and so on to put up their fares. And of course, the transport of goods, invariably, it's an excuse for food prices to go up because, as we've discussed before in your show, most goods in South Africa are transported by road, and the increased fuel costs increases the transport of the goods, and it all feeds through to us, the consumer, at the end of the day, at a time when, of course, the average consumer is probably under more financial pressure than ever before. But the reason is simple. I mean, people ask, why has the fuel price gone up? Well, it's fairly simple. The price of Brent crude oil has increased sharply in the last month, trading almost pretty close to $60 a barrel, and it's been down below 30 at one point. Very good if you own Sasol shares, not so good if you're putting fuel into your car, though, unfortunately.
I like that. Very good if you own Sasol shares, but not if you're putting fuel into your car. The other thing that's happened this week, we had a family meeting where the president actually reduced some of the restrictions, you know, a little bit, increasing, you know, the curfew time from about 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. And what was the other thing? Yes, the big one, alcohol sales. I think that's what a lot of people actually tuned into the family meeting for. What do you make of the pronouncements and, I guess, impact going forward?
Well, you mentioned it. The biggest impact will be the alcohol sales. You know, we seem to forget. Yes, we all understand why they stopped the alcohol sales, so there would be less trauma cases in the hospital, so they could deal with COVID. But the alcohol is a huge business in this country. Not only for those of us who buy a case of beer or a bottle of wine for our homes, but also in the entertainment industry, the restaurant industry, and it's a big part of all our culture. You can't imagine standing around a braai without a beer or a drink in your hand. So, and also, of course, we mustn't forget that there's a big, what we call sin tax on alcohol. There's quite a chunk of what we pay for our alcohol that goes into the government fiscus. So while it's not being sold, the government is in fact not collecting any of the so-called sin taxes. So that alone, to get the bottle stores open again, albeit at restricted trading times, and to get more people back into our restaurants and our taverns and our bars, this is a part of the economy that has really, really, really suffered. effort. So it's a huge boost to that industry, and I hope those of us who can will support the restaurant and the entertainment industry and help them get back on their feet, and because it's a, as I said, a huge part of the economy and of course a huge employer as well, and hopefully this has saved a number of jobs going forward, sir.
No, we definitely hope that it's that the lifting of some of these restrictions has indeed helped some of those operators to increase their business, and we should do our part to support them. But speaking about some of the syntaxes that you made reference to when it comes to the alcohol industry, I'm sure these are some of the issues that Finance Minister Tito Mboweni is going to have to be grappling with as he gets ready to present the country's budget towards the end of this month.
Correct, yes, the budget is scheduled for Wednesday the 24th of February, so it's about 3 weeks away, just under 3 weeks away, and I have no doubt that Tito Mboweni is hard at work in presenting what is going to be, without a shadow of a doubt in my mind, the most challenging budget that any finance minister in this country has ever had to deal with. And we seem to say that every year, but he's sitting grappling with a situation where there's no economic growth. In fact, there's an economic decline at the moment. The government has got more debt than it's ever had before. It's borrowing money to balance its books. There's more unemployment than we've ever had before. And of course, high unemployment, businesses going out of business, businesses not making money, means less tax collection. We were already a very highly taxed nation, not only on income tax, but we've got to remember that we all pay 15% VAT on everything we buy, and we pay a tax every time we stay in a hotel. We pay a tax when we import goods. We are taxed in every which way but loose, and he has very little room, in my opinion, to increase taxes. So how he's going to budget and how he's going to balance the books, I have to be honest with you, I'm at a bit of a loss, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see what the minister comes up with. Unfortunately, I think one area he may be looking at is increasing VAT again, but that's just a personal view. I've got no inside knowledge of that, I'm afraid.
Well, let's see what he has to do and what options are available to him, because a lot of the reallocation happened last year. So right now he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. So that's been it for this business wrap. Thank you so much, Ken, for giving us some insight into the week's top trending business and economics news, letting us know what's going on in terms of the recent fuel price increase, the recent lifting of restrictions, especially the alcohol ban, and the supporting industries that would have suffered because of it, and then just some thoughts around the upcoming budget that's set to be presented on the 24th of February by Finance Minister Tito Mboweni. On the other side of this, we continue with the show. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Business Wrap with Ken Sweatman. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
In our Buffalo Index, we look at what your 100 Rand can do for you. And for today, we are looking at what it is to get educated in terms of investments. How can you up your investment knowledge game? Because that's the main topic for today, how to get involved in the stock market. And some of the ways that you can do that is by attending online courses. And we decided to favor online courses simply because of what's going on with COVID-19. Lockdowns, etc. Working from home, this has become a way of life for many people around the world. So if you're looking to up your knowledge game on the investment side, you can turn to Udemy, which is an online education platform. This is a recommendation from Investopedia, and you can look at two particular courses. The first one is called the Stock Market from Scratch, which costs about $95 US, or 14 Buffalo at a cost of about 1,425 Rand. Another one is the ultimate stock market investing, how to learn how to value stocks, and that costs about half the price, or 7.5 Buffaloes. Let's make it 8 Buffaloes at 750 Rand. So that's something, for the biggest, for the beginners, and then on the other side is for the people that consider themselves a little bit more like pros. And then on the local front, you can also turn to some of the options. Just One Lab, which is an education platform for people that want to learn about investing. We're actually going to be talking to the founder of that company later on in the show, so you can hear, you know, how they go about, you know, the frameworks about how do they, you know, teach you to invest in companies and stocks and things like that. But that's another alternative. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we get into the main topic.
You don't have to be a liker to like things.
Oh my gosh.
So like us on Facebook. Like us on Facebook. Facebook. FR Fan in brackets, voice of Vince. Mob Justice on the Business Buzz.
We are talking about investing here on, you know, our first edition of the Business Buzz for 2021. And, you know, on the retail side, very, you know, interesting things have been going on in and around the investment world. 2020, we saw, you know, many rallies, especially in technology, but, you know, many crashes at the same time. But, you know, for you as an individual investor, what does all of this mean? And what could it potentially mean to help us to weigh in on, you know, ways in which you and I can get in on the action? We are joined by Warren Ingram, who is the co-founder of Galileo Capital. Warren, greetings to you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I think a good place for us to start before we get into how we get in on the action. Galileo Capital, what are you guys, you know, specializing in?
We're a wealth management business, so we the bulk of what we do is to help people make, you know, better, smarter money decisions, especially in difficult times. And I guess this classifies as difficult times. And we generally provide investment focus on what we do. So we're not a business that worries about things like selling you life insurance and all that. We're a bunch of investment propeller heads who. We like to look at the world and find places for people to make money in a reasonably safe way. I guess that's the short answer.
Well, you know, following on from that, for normal, you know, people out there sitting and given everything that's going on, why should the average South African actually consider investing in the stock market at the moment? You know, pros and cons. Are there really pros at the moment, and how can they actually get started?
So I think I think the answer is that there are always reasons for us to avoid investing and for us to be scared of stock markets and to find better uses for our money, especially in the short term. But the reality is, if you want to allow your money to work while you're sleeping and allow your money to grow while you're working, then the only way to do that is to be an investor as well as someone who works. And to me, if I'm going to be an investor, I'm not going to waste my time investing in cash and money market accounts and those kinds of things, because the growth rates on those are awful. Generally over long periods of time, cash will grow at about the same rate as inflation. And if you pay any kind of tax, then you're doing worse than inflation. So to me, if I'm going to be an investor, I'm going to make sure that I'm in assets that are going to grow at a much faster rate than inflation. And over the last probably 150 years, the best place to beat inflation by the most amount of money has been the stock market. And before we feel too depressed about South Africa, and especially the JSE, you know, the thing to understand about the JSE is it's one of the top three performing stock exchanges in the world over the last 100 to 110 years. So, you know, we shouldn't get too depressed about what happened on our share market over the last, let's say, 3 or 4 years, because, you know, that's just part of a cycle, and cycles turn, and then all of a sudden we see growth again, and then we get FOMO because we feel like we've missed out on the growth because we were sitting on the sidelines holding our money in cash. So to me, if you look at how the world's wealthy have built their money over long periods of time, a big chunk of that has been in the stock market. And so I think that I'm not saying it's a no-brainer, but it's one of the smartest decisions people will make is to start investing in the stock market and start to do it as early as possible for as long as possible. And
Sorry to cut you off there, but I was just going to say, following on from what you're saying, for people that are listening and are saying, okay, fine, Warren is making some fair points, but how do I actually begin?
I think it's it always seems daunting and, you know, like really intimidating to start investing, especially when we talk about shares, and then you start to read anything on, I guess nowadays, Reddit or anything like that, it becomes quite frightening. But I think there's a very simple way. And to me, the easiest way for someone to build up a portfolio is in a thing called an index tracker or an exchange traded fund. So just to explain that jargon, if you look at South Africa, there is a way to buy the 40 biggest companies on the stock exchange by buying one simple investment. And that's called a top 40 ETF, exchange traded fund. And you can do that with amounts of money as small as $50. And it's certainly not a product that I sell, or it's not mine, so I'm not going to make any money by telling you this, but you can go to a platform like Easy Equities, and you know, you can, I mean, you can start an account with, you know, as I say, $50, and you can, you know, put in $50 every time you've got some money. Obviously you can put in a lot more money than that, but to me, you know, if you just started by opening an account and putting in you know, money into something like the Satrix Top 40 Exchange Traded Fund, you could do a lot worse with your money than that. And you know, as I say, you're buying the 40 biggest companies on the stock exchange. So you're buying some mining houses, you're buying some you know, luxury goods manufacturers. You're buying Naspers, which is the owner of you know, Tencent, you know, one of the very biggest tech companies in the world. So you're getting really good exposure to banks, insurance companies, all of that, and you're buying it with one investment. And as I say, you know, it's not the place only for the super rich, because you can start with $50. So I think that's probably the most cost-effective way for someone to start an investment portfolio with a small amount of money, where you're not getting ripped off by high fees or some agents, you know, charging you big upfront commissions or something like that. And people have made really big money by just being, you know, being invested in one simple thing. So I think that's a great place to start.
You know, as you're talking right now, I'm just thinking about, you know, that perception, because you did say just now that you don't need to have a lot of money. You can even just start with $50 to just invest on the exchange. Why do you think that mentality still pervades? We've actually had the CEO of Purple Group on the show before, and Purple Group is the one that actually runs and operates Easy Equities, and it sounds like, you know, platforms like that are doing a lot to reduce the cost of getting into the market. But, you know, from your purview, why do you think those mentalities are still there, where people still think you need a lot of money to invest, when there's so many products that are allowing people to invest with small amounts of money?
I think it's probably a historical thing, and it comes from two angles. So the one is that the financial services market in South Africa for a long time, you know, probably 50 years, was, you know, was a place where they encouraged you to buy products, and they encouraged you, you know, if you didn't have a lot of money, they really wanted you just to buy a retirement annuity or a unit trust, and not to worry too much about shares. And shares were basically only bought through stockbrokers who charged you quite a lot of money and were rather intimidating, unfriendly people to deal with. But you know, that's the one side of the history of the product market in South Africa. But the other side is just the history of South Africa, I guess. You know, there are kind of there's an entirely new generation of savers and investors whose parents have no history with money in the kind of formal investing market. And so, you know, if you grow up in an environment where your parents and grandparents were excluded from formal savings and formal investments, then I believe it's a hugely intimidating place to approach. You know, most of us learn quite a lot about money from our parents, you know, and if your parents weren't in the formal investment market, then asking them about investing in a share, you're not likely to get a very warm response, right? Because you know, it's going to be intimidating for parents and grandparents. So we've got probably 1.5 generations of people now that are entering the market and having to learn a lot for themselves from scratch, from zero. And so I think it's, you know, it's the two things arriving at the same time. You know, it's the South African legacy of apartheid, I guess, and also then just the product market here, which has been unfriendly to private investors for a very long time. But fortunately, as you say, you know, the product providers have changed. There are new ones entering the market all the time that are very tech savvy, very keen to make investments approachable, doing a lot around financial education. You know, and there are lots of, I'm going to put myself in that bracket, but lots of us that are trying hard to write books and, you know, do podcasts and blogs and those kinds of things to make investing seem less intimidating and more approachable for investors. So I think the time is ripe for private investors in South Africa again, you know, smaller investors.
I guess coupled with, you know, that issue of the historical, you know, some of the historical imbalances and also the structure of financial services, industries, high fees, all of those things that you've just mentioned is the jargon, you know, surrounding investing. In fact, at the start of this conversation, you actually went into some detail to explain, you know, what an index tracker is and, you know, that type of thing. For people that do want to get to know what some of these, you know, what some of these words mean, equity and, you know, markets and the close and the short and, you know, long and, you know, all of those things. How can people, do you advise is a good way for people to get started on that journey?
I think there are probably a couple of routes. So one which is free is, you know, use the internet. You know, there's things like Investopedia, which I guess is the investment version of Wikipedia, and it provides a lot of explanations on what these terms mean, what, you know, explaining the jargon in a hopefully in a fairly simple way, and there are a lot of the big sort of financial websites that do quite a bit nowadays to provide some education. There are lots of talking heads that provide YouTube channels and podcasts that you can listen to help you with that, and then, you know, I mean, good old radio. You know, if radio was developed today, I think it would probably be the next big thing in transferring information to millions of people at the same time at very low cost. And so, you know, you can't ignore radio. And then I think you can, you know, if you've got a little bit of money, and I'm saying a little bit of money is kind of 200-400 bucks, you know, don't be afraid to buy some books, you know, whether they're physical books or ebooks on investing. You know, there are quite a few South African authors that are now writing about personal finances and teaching people about money. And so, you know, there's certainly good authors out there. I'm trying not to sound like I'm punting myself because I've written a couple of books, but there are some other South African authors out there as well that have done, you know, good work on this.
I think a good place for us to maybe end off is maybe getting a sense for those that do want to start that journey and are saying, okay, fine, guys, Warren sounds like he knows what he's talking about. I'm keen to get my hands on his books. What are some titles, you know, that you would recommend to young people? Because our audience is university students and a lot of young professionals.
So I'll start with one that's got a really controversial title. What wasn't my book, but Manage Your Money Like an Effing Grown-Up. That's written by Sam Beck-Bessinger. I guess it's aimed at young people trying to explain the principles and some of the jargon and some of the game plans that people can that they can implement for themselves. I wrote a book called How to Become Your Own Financial Advisor. I kind of update that every few years now, and that's really designed to try and get people to, with no financial knowledge, to get them going, to explain what are things like unit trust and exchange traded funds, and then some game plans as to how you can manage your money. So I think those are two good ones. Then one of my favorite very old books that was written, I think in the 1970s, is called The Richest Man in Babylon. Not an expensive book and really worth reading. If you've got a little bit of money left over after that, then there's another great book called The Secret Millionaire, which I think is really worth reading. So there are four book recommendations for people who want to start.
So that's been us with Warren Ingram, who is the co-founder of Galileo Capital, and he was just giving us some insight into what the world of investing is looking like at the moment and how you and I can get started in the world of investing, particularly on the stock market. He's saying that historically the returns that we get from the stock market have, you know, outpaced other forms of investment. But he's also just saying that times have changed, and there's been a lot of democratizing of the markets where you don't necessarily need to be an oil baron or tech billionaire to be investing in the market. You can get in for as little as 50 Rand, just depending on the platform that you choose. He's also an author, you know, talking about, some of his book recommendations, including his own title called, am I correct in saying How to Become Your Own Financial Advisor?
Absolutely.
Yes, and another book that he recommends, which I've personally read, is The Richest Man in Babylon. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we continue with the show. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
COVID Biz Watch. COVID Biz Watch on The Business Buzz.
In our COVID Business Watch, we look at the impact of COVID-19 on various businesses in and around South Africa. And for today, our producer, Slin Lim Sibi, spoke to Twana Nogodi, who is from Bushbuck Ridge in Mpumalanga, who is currently based here in Johannesburg. He is the director of Ntwanano Group, which produces Ntwanano Gin and Ntwanano Wines. He has a master's degree from UNISA and actually mentors young entrepreneurs in his spare time. We asked him, how has COVID-19 affected your business? What measures did you put in place to ensure your business survives until the South African economy picks up? Here's what he had to say.
Hey, beautiful people. It's your boy, Ntwanano Godi, a.k.a. the Lucky Therapist. I'm a director of Ntwanano Group, which brought you guys the beautiful beverages, Ntwanano Gin, as well as Ntwanano Wines. Just a bit of background about me and the business. So we've been around the block in terms of research and the work that we've done. Started a couple of years ago, dating back to about 2016-2017. But we launched our first product in March 2019. And of course, being in a space that involves, beverages, there's obviously a lot of challenges. There is a lot of barriers to entry. And there's not a lot of, people of color that play in that space that you can easily get access to, or they can serve as your mentors. So it is a predominantly white-owned business. There's a lot of foreign businesses that plays into that market. It's not something that, it's easy to get into. You need a lot of passion, you need a lot of capital, you need a lot of support. You need a great team behind you. And I believe in Ntwanano Group, we are blessed with that. We are a team of young and vibrant individuals that seeks to, break into, any form of areas that we think we deserve to play in, or in space that we feel that we need to play in. Having said that, we are quite passionate about what we do. We have a clear-cut vision of what we want to achieve. Our mission and vision are clearly articulated, and we are in the process of executing that. Being in the beverage space, and with all the challenges that were faced, across the globe with the COVID-19 pandemic, we also found ourselves in a very, very awkward position. Being a fairly new brand, we couldn't when the president of the country announced that we are going to go on lockdown, you know, a lot of businesses took a knock, and unfortunately we were hit hard as well, because we had to close operations. And as a fairly new business, we were in a space where we're trying to get this baby on board, we're trying to get this baby into the market, we're trying to get this baby into the people, we're trying to introduce this. We had a severe marketing plan on hand, and all of that had to come into a halt. And obviously with a lot of capital being invested into the business, once you stop operating, technically that means that that investment is going to be stuck in there and you're not going to see returns in the near future. So it was a very difficult moment. It is still a very difficult moment, but you know, we had to devise other means. And unfortunately, alcohol was one of the main industries that was hit hard, and we were also extremely affected by that. But what we did was to, you know, also use that opportunity as a breather and to also review our plans and also to explore other marketing plans, other marketing avenues, expanding on the digital platforms. Even though we could not sell the alcohol, but we continued to talk to the right people, talk to the relevant people that we needed to bring into the brand, but also tried to, you know, act or capitalize, you know, on the digital space, because when everybody is stuck at home, everybody, you know, it's online, everybody is in the digital space, everybody is, you know, on their phones all the time. So that was the best time for us to also just market the product, even though, you know, when you market the product like that and people want access to the bev and you can give them the bev and you can tell them where to get it or to order, but obviously the deliveries will only have to happen after the lockdown. It was a bit of a concern and a challenge on our end. However, we had to make sure that the brand awareness continues, the adverts continues in all our social media platforms. But yeah, it was a very difficult time, I must say. We're still feeling the knock-on effects of such a lockdown. But if there's any advice that I can give to businesses, you know, or young people, or entrepreneurs, or upcoming entrepreneurs, so entrepreneurs wanna be, is that, you know, it has to start with the passion, and you must always be prepared, you know. In many cases, there is a lot of unforeseen things, and I think the pandemic has taught a lot of us that one day you can be on top of the world, and the following day you could be on the other side, you know. So things don't always, you know, go well in business. Things are not always loom and gloom. Sometimes things will go south, and when they do, you should be prepared for that. And by that I mean that you need to always devise a couple of strategies that will sustain the business and make sure that, you know, you give it your all. In our case, like I said, we had to capitalize on the digital space to market the product. But, you know, when the passion is there, when the drive is there, and you're making sure that you remain true to the dream, you will have to find ways. You have to make a plan to keep the business afloat. Yeah, so with that, I'll say, and where you can, also try to to renegotiate your things. Don't wait until things get extremely bad. If you've got investors on board, even though they will know what's going on, but take the initiative to talk to them. If you've got clients that you could not deliver to them certain products and services before a certain announcement is made, still do keep, people in touch. We're all human. People do understand that certain things do happen, especially unforeseen events like the COVID-19. But do keep those relationships going. Do check up on your clients. Do talk to your suppliers. Keep in touch with your customers. Make sure your clients are also aware of what's going on. And and also explore other means, of keeping the business afloat. Like in this case, there were a lot of government initiatives. And also just try to tap into that and read a lot, expand on the knowledge. Most of these opportunities actually come in the midst of all these challenges. So, as much as the economy has been hit hard, a lot of businesses have been hit hard, but if you look around, you also realize that these have also presented a lot of opportunities. So sometimes you need to be wise enough to come up with a complete turnaround strategy for your business, or to start exploring other avenues of trading, or other avenues of doing business, or other avenues of production, or other avenues of selling, or other avenues of maintaining relationships. And, with all of that, and still, the fact that people are locked out or logged in or logged down, that doesn't mean that the business does not happen. 90% of my business is now happen online via visual platforms, and it is what it is. So we don't have to drive and see people. I know at times there are businesses that you want to have that look and feel. You want to talk to a person next to you, but this is the new normal. So adjust, adapt, or die. Yeah, signing out. It's your boy, Antoinano Godi, a.k.a. The Liquid Therapist. We are available on all social media platforms at Antoinano Gin, as well as Antoinano Wines. You can also check our online store, www.ntwananogin.co.za, as well as www.ntwananowines.co.za. You'll get all our contact details on all our social media platforms. You can DM us, you can email us, you can call our offices, you can order your gins or wine or your wines online. Or you can call our offices, and there's going to be people readily, available to assist you. Check our products, enjoy our products. It's Ntwananano to the world. Signing out. Keep well. Let's get it.
Forget what the little birdie told you. Follow us at BoFM and join the conversation. You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. We are talking about what it means to be an investor in the stock market, and is it even worth it to be investing at the moment? And just before the break, you heard us, we were in discussion with the team at Galileo Capital, just hearing about some of the basics of investment and how people can get into it. But right now we want to maybe focus on some of the things that people can do, to go about either educating themselves or, doing the right thing, because everyone always wants to know, how do I pick the right stocks? So to sort of help us to, unpack on this part of the show, we're joined by Simon Brown, who is the founder of Just One Lab, an investment education platform. Simon, greetings to you.
Evening, always a pleasure.
I think a good place for us to start in terms of, you know, our chat, because, you know, our focus is on the fact that right now we hear a lot around the stock market, even though we're in this, you know, economic depression around the world, you know, stock markets, you know, whether locally, but more internationally in the United States, seem to just be rising further and further. So our first question is just, are stocks the new lottery tickets? You know, because lately we've seen exponential, you know, growth and interest from retail investors, especially with this GameStop story that's recently happened. So are people just getting onto a bandwagon? You know, what's actually going on here?
So, I mean, certainly, you know, to the question when you said, is investing a lottery? My answer would have been, well, GameStop certainly seems to indicate that fact. But GameStop in of itself, and there's a certain bunch of circumstances that sort of all came together at the same point in time to create the phenomenon, which was, and to a degree still is, GameStop. And that's, you know, it's not completely uncommon. It's happened before. It'll happen again, but I think it belies the bigger picture to think that is the market. It's grabbing the headlines, but I mean, to your comment up front, I mean, what we've seen in markets in the US and even in South Africa has very much been, well, what's been billed as a K-shaped recovery. And what I mean by that is we've got some stocks which have done incredibly well, and they're the top leg of the K. And in the US, that has been tech stocks, Zoom, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft. An astounding stat coming out of Amazon. You know, the online sales in the US was increasing at about 1% a year, you know, taking market share from the traditional bricks and mortar outlets there. And what we saw in 2020 was a leap forward where essentially it grabbed 8% of market share in a single year. We get why, lockdown, we couldn't go to the shops. We started buying all sorts of things online that we had never bought before. But that does mean that Amazon has effectively picked up close to a decade of growth in a single year. So there's justification to some of those tech stocks prices absolutely booming. Now, the phrase we use is priced for perfection. You know, that they really are absolutely perfectly priced. And what I mean by that is that they've priced in good news, and not just the good news of the end of the pandemic and the vaccine process, which is, you know, ongoing and will take a year or so. They've priced in the next 3 or 4 years of good news. But that's been our top leg of the K. The bottom leg has very much been leisure stocks, you know, whether it be holidays or cruises or restaurants, and they've been massively struggling. So the run in the markets has, to a degree, been justified and makes some sense if you view it through that sort of K-shaped recovery. Locally, the top leg of the K has been our mining stocks. We've got commodities doing incredibly well, gold, platinum group metals, coal, etc., and that's pulled our market up. And the bottom leg of our K has, the same in as other parts of the world, it's been leisure, it's been parts of the property space, and to a degree, banks, although they're kind of in the middle, they've sort of lagged. So the run in the market, when you stand back and look at it from that sense, does make some sense, even though it intuitively you think to yourself, you know, pandemic, stock market's hitting all-time highs, makes no sense.
As you're talking, I'm just wondering about how do people, because, you know, the next obvious question is always, how do people go about picking the right stocks? And, you know, as you're talking about Amazon, one can't help but to imagine that there is an element of, you know, sort of thinking about life logically, to say that in a pandemic, people are sitting at home, they can't go to shops, you know, so possibly they're going to be shopping online more. Who is providing online services? Possibly Amazon. Who's likely to benefit? Possibly, you know, that sort of thing. So would you say that's maybe a framework that people can use when thinking about picking stocks? Because I think, you know, we have this get rich quick mentality when it comes to the stock market. People think it's a casino or something like that. But when it comes to, you know, doing it in a sober way, is that a framework to use?
I think you're 100% right. I mean, yeah, as you say, a lot of outsiders do look at the stock market, do think it's a casino. They think it's a lotto. They see GameStop. They kind of think that proves it to a degree. But in truth, investing broadly is really just a large amount of some common sense. And it's very easy for me and you to be chatting and instill that common sense. It's a lot harder when we're putting our hard-earned money on the table, when we've got, you know, crazy things happening outside, you know, first time in a century, major pandemics and the like. But it is often asking yourself, to your example, okay, so we're in lockdown, but we still need to buy certain goods. There's some things we don't need to buy. We're not necessarily buying a new motor vehicle because we're going to be driving less because we're at home. But we are going to need goods. Well, who are those? You know, how do they get to us? Who are those providers? Zoom, the utility we're using right now. You know, most people had never heard of Zoom a year ago, but suddenly it's, how do I connect with people? Well, I need to connect digitally. And there's many ways. You know, WhatsApp can do video. There's other Zoom competitors. Microsoft has got Teams, and Citrix, and many, many others. But you sit down and you start to think, make no mistake, the pandemic is changing things. And it's going to be, you know, a number of years before we are completely through that process. But what is going to be the outcomes during that pandemic? And what will society broadly look like post that pandemic? And we can make some fairly, you know, simple observations, none of which are rocket science, but all of which start help us to make those decisions as to what we should be investing in, where we should be investing in, and how we should be investing.
And then as a follow-up, you know, maybe to that, when people are looking at these things, should they just be considering it within their local market, as to say, okay, fine, you know, as I'm thinking about these problems, should I just be looking at who are the local providers? Maybe it's Takealot, maybe it's whoever it is, or do I broaden out, you know, my thought process to be like, which international companies to think about? I guess in a nutshell, this then comes to, you know, on a retail level, you know, should people, you know, just confine themselves to SA, or, you know, if they can, you know, look to diversify US stocks, etc.?
I think we do need to take a global view. And I'll be honest, what I do, you know, I have investments into the US, but I use what we call exchange traded funds. And what that means is I buy a single counter on the JSE. And it effectively goes and buys the one I buy. It buys 1,200 of the largest companies in the world. And that's because, you know, it's firstly that there are probably 20,000 investable shares in the world. And that is simply too much for an average person to manage, particularly if investing is not your career, if it's something you do sort of almost as a side hustle, as a hobby. So I use that exchange traded fund that gives me a basket of global stocks. And then I'm able to focus down. And what I'm trying to do, those ETFs are what I would call the core of my portfolio, and they will rise and fall as do global markets. And over the long term, they will rise, and they will also get the benefit of any currency weakness because I buy them in rands. But of course, those companies are in North America, Western Europe, Japan, and the like. So they're euros, dollars, yen, and the like. And then I buy individual stocks in the JSE, which I'm trying to sort of find the winners. And not short-term winners, but we're talking investing here. So, you know, winners over years, if you get it really well, winners over decades, if we look at the Capitec story. And in the South African space, I mean, what we do have is truthfully a very small market, about maybe 300 investable shares on the market, and a lot of categories that simply doesn't exist. You mentioned Takealot, you know, owned by the Naspers subsidiary, but it's so tiny within that. So we don't really have any sort of online businesses that we could buy who do online delivery, sort of an Amazon type of competitor. So we are in some points restricted, But then we get other opportunities. We've got some, you know, world-class banks and mining opportunities. We've got some, you know, great property and the like. So there's other bits that we can pick up on. But for me, it's a case of, you know, those 20,000 odd shares is just too large a universe. And even though, you know, my day job is in the markets, people who actively manage client money in a global sphere, they will use processes as well to try and reduce that universe of 20,000 and turn it into something that is more manageable for them to invest into.
You know, as you're talking, the other thing that then comes to mind is, what do you say to people that have that notion that investment should be left to professionals, that the common man should, not worry themselves about what's going on in the market. They should just let, pension funds do it on their behalf, etc. Leave it to the experts. What do you say to that?
So I don't have an objection to the experts per se. My objection to the experts is quite simply that oftentimes they charge a fairly chunky price for the service they provide, and truthfully, they don't actually do very much. And my measure is quite simple. Is, you know, let's say the market is returning 10% on average per year. Take that as an example. I'm paying these investment experts to essentially do better than that 10%, because I can get the 10% quite simply by buying those exchange-traded funds that I mentioned a moment ago. Are they actually delivering me a return ahead of 10%? Are they worth the money that I'm paying? And in many cases, I mean, the evidence is simply not. Standard & Poor Dow Jones, which is one of the largest index providers in the world. And an index is just a way of measuring the return of a market in its totality, or a substrata of that market. They do the research, which shows that broadly over the long term, only about 15% of those experts actually beat the market, which means your odds of picking one of them who, after you've paid them their fees, delivers you a return ahead of that 10% that the market has done is frankly quite slim. That also then plays into the follow-up, which is then, well, what chance do we as an individual have of being able to do something which the experts can't? And that's a perfectly valid question. And part of the answer to that would be, well, we don't. So stop trying and just go and buy those exchange-traded funds we've mentioned. But there are some benefits which, as a private investor, we have over the professionals. And two of them, and they're quite important ones, is that my time horizon is very different. A professional is having to report on a monthly basis and detailed reporting on a quarterly basis in terms of performance. And if they're doing poorly, money can very, very quickly leave. I can, you know, take my investment and my time horizon, depending on our age, you know, our time horizon can be measured in decades. So we can look at a stock and say, you know what, it's having a bit of a tough time now, but it'll improve in time. Circumstances will come back to it, and it'll then start to beat the market. And over the longer term, it'll beat that market. The second benefit we have is, if you are a manager of money, you've probably got hundreds of millions, maybe billions in management, which means there's quite simply a large portion of the market that is uninvestable to you because it is just too small. So we as a private investor can go and engage and invest into those smaller cap stocks, which often have better returns, are often more innovative, although sometimes they're old school type businesses. But it's an opportunity. It's a space where we can operate, where simply the large fund managers can't, because there's stocks out there which are market cap of a couple of hundred million, and a really, really large fund manager probably needs to buy a couple of hundred million rands of the stock to make it, you know, noticeable within their portfolio. And so they simply restricted and unable to.
And I guess lastly, because it certainly does sound like there is a place for private investors in the market, when you look at what happened with GameStop, Do you think that moves the needle in any way when it comes to shifting the dynamics between investment professionals and private individuals, you know, where the power lies in terms of making the market?
I think it has. And I don't, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know that it's going to be a giant shift sort of in the league of the pandemic or something like that. But I think what you know, GameStop and the whole saga there has in many cases been billed as a, you know, a private investor sitting at home trading against the billionaire hedge funds and the like. And that's not completely untrue, but it's also sort of painting over a lot of it. Make no mistake, some hedge funds lost billions of dollars during the GameStop as it played out, but you know, others probably made as much money. But it did, what it did do is it showed some weaknesses in the system in terms of the processes around how the providers such as Robinhood, and I think it's highlighted that, which a lot of people weren't perhaps aware of those processes, and I think that's hugely important. But it also it showed a sense of that actually the big hedge funds are sometimes wrong. Now, you know, GameStop was never worth $500 a share, but it equally probably wasn't worth $10 either. And it does suggest that the private investor can, in a sense, sort of gang up. And you know, there's lots to say against ganging up and the like. And you know, there will be other GameStops that will probably fail as spectacularly as this one succeeded. But I think it has shaken sort of the industry to a degree, raised some important questions. And I think one of the issues, which I hope doesn't come, which is a sort of a knee-jerk response to renewed regulation. I'm not sure that we need regulation from the GameStop. I do think that, as I said, there were things that processes we were just unaware of that suddenly have been highlighted. And frankly, make for a more efficient market now that we have that awareness of exactly how the back end and the like actually works.
So that's been us with Simon Brown, who is the founder of Just One Lap, an investment education platform, giving us some insight into some of the current investment trends at the moment. More importantly, giving us some frameworks and just around how to pick stocks to invest in. And he's saying that in a lot of cases, there are, you know, flash in the pan events that can happen. But for the most part, if you apply common sense and you just look at the real economy, the issues that people are facing and the companies that are set to benefit, and you look for companies that are providing essential goods and services, especially during this time, then that might be a good approach when it comes to the market. Also saying that he has nothing against the experts, you know, it's always good to educate yourself if you can, you know, simply because you do take away that amount of fees and commissions that you would be paying over, but it's always good to get that expert input wherever you can. Just ending off talking about the debate around the recent GameStop debacle and you know what that actually means for exposing some of the systemic problems when it comes to investments and the market. So that's been it, Simon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Absolute pleasure, always.
So that's been it. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
You don't have to be a liker to like things.
Oh my God.
So like us on Facebook.
Like us on Facebook.
FR Fan in brackets, voice of this. You're tuned in to The Business Buzz.
So that's been it for this edition of The Business Buzz. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening. Thank you to Simon and thank you to Warren for just coming on and sharing their insights with us around how you can start with the stock market and how you can actually go about deciding what to invest in. Some thoughts is that, you know, two big points. Firstly, you need to educate yourself. This is not one of those things that you can can just go into, because there is a real risk that you might lose your money. And, you know, money makes the world go round. We all need to put food on the table. So don't gamble with your money. And then the second thing is just the fact that, as you heard, you know, throughout the show, investing in the stock market has historically provided some of the best returns that you can get out there. So there is value in getting involved. Now, whether you're going to employ an expert to do it on your behalf or you do it for yourself, there is value in getting in, especially if one of your goals is to, you know, provide and build some wealth for yourself or for your family. Let us know what you think. Have you been investing in the stock market? Are you an investor? Do you want to be an investor? On Facebook, we have our FM Voice of Wits. You can find our other Facebook page, that is Wits Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we're at VOWFM, and our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also search for us on iono.fm for our podcasts. Otherwise, you can turn to vits.journalism.co.za/business to find all our great content there. So with that, we've reached the end of tonight's show. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Kutlwano Serame, together with our producers, that is Glory Mabuza, together with Slindle Msibi and Tando Klimba, together with Simbarashe Honde. Don't miss the Business Bar, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of a business. Don't turn that out. We've got more great content coming up on the VOW FM lineup. Otherwise, for myself, Mudio Mob, Justice Kavaza, and the rest of the team, it is take care.
The Business Buzz with Mudio Mob, Justice Kavaza. The Business Buzz Podcast.